This is Creepy and Geeky, a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Welcome to Creepy and Geeky. I'm your host, Robert, and on today's episode, we're continuing our look at Phase 4 of the MCU with the next installment in the Multiverse Saga. On this episode, we're talking about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series. Joining me for this episode is Julia Mercado. Julia is a freelance writer and co-host of the Remote Watch podcast. Welcome to the show, Julia.
Hi, thank you for having me, Robert. It's going to be super fun.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Good to have you on the show. And you and I previously were guests on the Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania episode of Podcast 616. So we have a little bit of familiarity with each other. Not a ton, but, you know, a little bit.
Let's just say it's not our first time talking Marvel.
Exactly. So, yeah. But, yeah, I was building these episodes, trying to get new people on the show. I like to have new people on as often as possible. And I reached out and luckily you were available. So that's great. excuse me. But yeah, we're going to talk about this is what like I said, the second installment in the new Phase 4 and in the Multiverse Saga, which became the Multiverse Saga. At the time this came out, they hadn't really announced that it was the Multiverse Saga, of course, because they were still messing around with people not letting us know that we were in a multiverse thing, as I detailed in the last episode of WandaVision. For me, we just talked off air just a little bit. Both of us had only watched this again for the first time since it had originally came out. And I still enjoy it. I still enjoy it quite a bit. There's a lot going on in this to like. I have a nostalgia for it, for the part of the storyline that takes off of a comic book storyline from the 80s when I was a kid and reading the original comic books. The whole John Walker storyline comes from that era when I first started getting heavier into comic books. And so that whole storyline was kind of like, okay, this is fun now getting this in live action. So for me, that adds a lot for me. So that aspect of it.
Do you still feel that way having seen it again?
I do. There's aspects of it that I didn't like that I think that it would have been interesting for them to take on a different tack to it. I think my biggest concern is the Flag Smashers and the way they're handled. But mostly just because I think there was an interesting group that they could have dealt with more so that would have been more in keeping, one, with the original storyline, and two, would have tied into Sam's story in a way. And we'll get into that. I still really enjoy this series, and I think that it's been maligned quite a lot by people. There's a large contingent of people who just didn't care for it, and which is fine. I mean, you know, everybody has their own tastes and everything, but I think there were a lot of people who just kind of hated it, just to hate it, but you know, maybe not.
I mean, I feel like that's a running thread with a lot of Phase 4 shows.
Right.
I mean, I say this as someone who first appeared on 616 for a She-Hulk episode,
Oh, yeah.
and spent the whole time She-Hulk aired like super defending it, even some days where I was like, maybe I shouldn't be so loud and proud about this show. But I mean, I feel like Falcon and the Winter Soldier really shouldn't fall in that category of, oh, we're just gonna forget it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like it's one of the stronger shows,
Yeah.
definitely in comparison to like Secret Invasion, but I'm not gonna take any shots there.
Yeah. That's the sad thing is that, you know, and I've talked about this a little bit on the show before, but I don't want to get into it too much until I get to the Secret Invasion episode. But Secret Invasion is definitely kind of the low point of everything. And it has so much going against it behind the scenes that caused it to be that way. And so, you know, that's the unfortunate thing. But then when you compare the Falcon and Winter Soldier to it, like Falcon and Winter Soldier seems much better in a lot of ways. And I think that, like I said, I think that many people have like not liked it. Based on, I think the problem is that WandaVision came out, and WandaVision was so different and so weird, and took so many chances that when you put something like Falcon and Winter Soldier up after that, and it's so by the books, kind of, you know, normal and didn't really take any chances. It took a few, but it kind of played it safe in a lot of ways. I think that's what kind of maybe people were expecting more from it. Because then right after that, you get Loki, which then takes a lot more chances and stuff again. So you've got this one show kind of sandwiched in between that's just kind of regular, kind of, I guess, run of the mill in a way, but I think still has a lot to say. And I think once people start going back to it, they're going to see, especially once the new Captain America movie comes out. I think people are going to start revisiting it, and they're going to go, okay, you know what? This isn't nearly as bad as we thought it was.
You know, that's the exact experience I actually had with Captain America: Winter Soldier. Because I swore up and down that my favorite was like Civil War and that's it. And then a
Oh,
friend of mine
wow.
was like, actually Kaylee from the Remote Watch podcast, shout out. It was like, let's go back and rewatch Winter Soldier. And then I was like, nope, never mind. This is my favorite. But I think it's also because I'm not too drawn to any of the Marvel stories that are kind of like on Earth, stuck in the government, and like there's some like military aspect to it, so I'm not too big of a fan of them. But don't get me
Right.
wrong, I love like the amazing fight scenes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I fell here with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because I really loved WandaVision and I love anything fantastical.
Right.
And then we came back to Earth and I was like, oh, we're here again. All right, thanks.
No, and I get that. That is a part of it that I think there's a lot of people who are like you, who are like, I want the fantastical and the weird. I don't need like earth-based, like too real stuff. And I get that. But I think that's what makes the MCU and Marvel Comics by themselves fascinating, because we can have all these different worlds going on. You can have the crazy magic of Doctor Strange and the, you know, outer space shenanigans of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you can have the smaller, more contained, maybe not even smaller, but the more grounded stuff like Captain America and Falcon and Winter Soldier and stuff like that. So that's what's fun for me. I know that this show, when it came out, there were a lot of people who were complaining because they felt that it was too pro-military, pro-government. And like, even when I watched it the first time, I was like, this show is not pro-military or government at all. It's like, feels like it's not criticizing it, but it's not necessarily showing it in a good light either.
Yeah, and
It
especially
shows
like,
the failures of government. So
Exactly. I mean, all it really takes is watching Sam's really final, almost final scene as Captain America. I'm not going to jump too far ahead if you want to kind of go in chronological order, but
No, it's okay.
just
I'm
that.
used to jumping all around.
Just that conversation alone with the senator is like, hey, you're at fault too. Remember how helpless you are. And there are other people who are helpless too. And it's like government and military have all this power, and it feels like they use it a good chunk of the time for the wrong things.
Right.
And this show only points that out even more. So,
yeah. No, and that's why I think that definitely going back and looking at this show was one, it was fun to go back. I like Captain America as a character, but I did feel that Falcon and Bucky both got put this side, like, because it wasn't their story. And so, you know, they were the side characters, although, you know, Bucky's story runs through both Winter Soldier and Civil War. So, and, you know, to a fair degree through First Avenger as well. So, I mean, he had some pretty good growth there, but we didn't get a lot of his, you know, any of that storyline from when he was in Wakanda. So it was kind of good to get some of those little missing pieces, and we get more of Sam's story. We get his family. So that's what I like about these Disney Plus shows, is that we get to live with these characters who were kind of on the sidelines a little bit more. Wanda, Vision, Sam and Bucky, Hawkeye, you know, we get a little bit more time with them. And I think that's what's been, those have been some of the better shows. Loki as well. You know, we get these chances to live with them a little bit more so than we did with the movies. And that's what made them more interesting in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. Honestly, when we were talking about kind of how the order of things came out, I think Falcon and the Winter Soldier coming out after WandaVision is kind of fitting, because WandaVision is pretty much, it's just like solo Wanda's story. And we don't quite understand fully the effects of the blip. And then it slowly unravels as the multiverse saga unravels. And it, by the time we get back to Earth, it's kind of, you get the sudden realization of like, oh wait, there's actual problems going on at home, and nobody's paying attention to this because you're too busy watching the witch in the corner over there having problems.
Right. Now, and I think that's what's fascinating about phase four of the MCU, is that the people have complained so much about how uneven it is, and how like slow and kind of boring it all is and everything. And I've never felt that way about the phase at all, because I felt like they needed at least some time, maybe not the whole phase, but they needed some time to kind of live in the after effects of the blip. And like, rarely do you ever get something like that. They could have jumped right into the next adventure and, you know, just had fun with it and just kind of never referenced it. But I thought that was the bolder move, was to sit there and look at and take these smaller moments, and, you know, especially in the TV series, and say, what are the after effects of this? How is this going to affect the people after this major cataclysmic event? Not only the fact that everybody vanished, but also when everybody comes back, how does that affect? And that's what's fascinating, especially about Falcon and Winter Soldier, because it's directly talking about the people who become refugees in the world, who came back to their lives 5 years after and discovered, well, I no longer can live in my house. I no longer have a job. You know, all these instances of things that happened that, you know, because in other shows, like you look at Spider-Man Far From Home, and that deals with some of the after effects of it, but everybody could just kind of jumps right back into their lives. Sure, they have to redo school for another year or whatever, but they still are just jumping back into their lives. And so as much as that's a fun little romp and everything like that, it doesn't deal with the like the harsher after effects of things. And I think that's what I like about this show, is it's a fun adventure. You're getting Sam and Bucky, you're figuring out, you know, where they're going to go from here, being, you know, friends of Captain America, but also the geopolitical aspects of the blip. And I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it's funny you bring up Far From Home. I didn't even think about that. I think they have classmates that are like 5 years older than them. Yeah. And it's like, by this point, you should have finished high school. Your friends can restart. That's fine, because they were gone for 5 years. But why are you still here? And I'm correct in saying both Sam and Bucky were blipped, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah. So now they have to deal with coming back. And I think Sarah's a good wake up call for that. And she's probably one of my favorite characters.
Oh yeah. 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 Cause she was there. She had to deal with everything. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, Sam and Bucky, and they have to deal with the fact that they blipped as well, that they lost 5 years of life along with everybody, and they come back, excuse me. And when they come back, their best friend, you know, the person that they both cared for, is now old and gone, you know, and is not. And I mean, and this is what's interesting, too, is that this series also doesn't kind of reconcile with what happened to Captain America. You know, that where is Steve? You know, at the end of Endgame, he's alive. He's just old. You know, did you know, is he? Where did he go? You know, it's not like he's dead. And so, but the way they treat him as if he's dead. But I do think that it's funny that there's this slightly running gag throughout the whole thing that Steve is really just on the moon watching down over everybody. And it just cracks me up.
I mean, it's kind of funny when they announce a new Captain America that, you know, Sam or Bucky didn't suddenly get a text from Steve being like, that's not me. Well, like, yeah. What made you think you could replace me?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that's ultimately where, you know, Steve was at in giving the shield to Sam, was you do what you think is right. And that's what Sam did in the beginning. He thought that Sam wasn't ready for the responsibility of being Captain America at that time. And he thought by giving up the shield and putting it on display for everybody to see and to have it be a part of American history was the right thing. Now, obviously, the government being the government, they're like, no, we need a Captain America and somebody mm-hmm. we can control. and so, you know, they were like, OK, well, we're going to do what we're going to do. Now, this does play into I want to get back into the comic books that this storyline comes from. Back in the 80s, there was a moment where Captain America was told by the government that he had to do what they said or he had to stop being Captain America. And so he stopped being Captain America. He's like, I'm not doing it. I don't work for you. I work for I'm for the people, the spirit of the country. And so he gives up being Captain America and he puts down the costume and the shield, and then they give it to somebody else, which turns out to be John Walker. And in the comic books, John Walker was a character who had been part of a group where John Walker had been a character called the Super Patriot. And he had, before he even becomes Captain America, he'd gotten a variant of the Super Soldier Serum and had been, you know, doing some stuff with like trying to become like an American hero type thing. And he had this group of three other guys with him called the Bold Urban Commandos, the Buckies. And Lamar Hoskins was one of those Buckies. And so there are little touchstones to adding those in. Lamar Hoskins ends up becoming his partner once he becomes Captain America. He becomes a character named Battlestar as well. So they,
I'm sorry, I'm here ahead. Laughing because it's like you're trying to be discount Captain America, and yet you need three sidekicks to make it.
Well, that was what was interesting. It was they were actually under the management of somebody else. It was like a PR kind of thing more than an actual like superhero group. It was weird. And it's been a while since I've read the story. I did read the story around the time that the first when Falcon and Winter Soldier first came out. But I haven't read it recently. But it is funny that, you know, they were a group of these guys who just kind of, it was more like PR stunt type stuff. They didn't really go out and help too many people, but that's what John Walker wanted to do. He really wanted to be like a Captain America-esque person. But he has anger issues, mm-hmm. which we see in the show as well. But it's interesting that they started him off in the show being powerless and then getting the power through that. I thought that was a unique take on it, and it was really good. Because we see just, you know, he's having to be this normal person who has to take on these extraordinary foes. And what does he do when he has the choice? He takes the serum himself because he's like, I can't do this otherwise. I have to be powerful in a way that I couldn't be before. And yeah, go ahead.
I'm just thinking back to when the show first aired, and that, like, that's what I really loved about the Disney Plus shows initially, like, was experiencing in real time with a lot of major Marvel fans.
Yeah.
But a lot of folks hadn't read the comics, me included. And it was just funny when pictures of John Walker as Captain America came out, and people were like, what is this broke Captain America doing? Why is he existing? And it honestly is interesting when you finally encounter him in the show, and that they try to sort of humanize him in a sense of, yeah, like, he's just been thrust into this, and now he has to handle the fact that he's just a normal guy. So what is he going to do to live up to the mantle of Captain America?
Yeah. No. And I like that. I like that, you know, he had this, you know, and did he make the right choice in getting the serum? I don't know. You know, it's obviously is something that, you know, it made things worse for him. But it also put him on an even playing field with the people, because otherwise he wasn't going to, his skill and everything wasn't going to be enough for him beforehand. And that was something that, you know, it weighed on him. But then you take somebody like Sam, who's exactly the same. No serum, no nothing, but Sam has a passion and a drive that and has the right attitude for becoming Captain America. Now, also Sam, you know, had already been the Falcon and had already had experiences and stuff. And so, but again, so did John Walker by being a soldier. So, you know, there's arguments on both sides of that. Did John Walker make the right decision? Was he justified in doing what he did? No, I don't think so.
No, beat me neither.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, he made the wrong choice in the heat of everything. And, you know, it comes to pay a price for him later. You know, he loses pretty much everything he was and is by the end of it. And which is similar to what happens in the comic books. While John Walker has become Captain America in the comic books, Steve has become a character called the Captain. He has a black costume and ends up getting a second shield from Tony. Tony makes him a vibranium shield, and he still performs as he always has, and then has to come in confrontation, eventually in confrontation with John Walker to stop him, which, you know, we don't get that in this. Sam and Bucky have to be the ones who take him down. And so it's fun to see a variation on the original storyline that kind of takes a lot of things that did happen in that storyline, but redoes it in a world without Steve, and who's going to be the one to handle that and deal with it. Now, in the original storyline, the Flag Smashers, I think, did appear That at the time it was different. There was one character called Flag Smasher. It was a guy, and he had a group called Ultimatum. So it's been slightly tweaked, of course, for the show, and it's but the group that John Walker dealt with the most was a group called the Watchdogs, and it was more like a. It really would have been kind of interesting and timely to have a group that was that the have this group because they were kind of a racist, like a white supremacist sort of group. And I think they would have been almost better to have in this because of all the stuff going on with Sam. And dealing with becoming Captain America, because there's a storyline that when Sam does become Captain America in the comic books, which he does, he deals with a lot of people who can't handle having a black Captain America. And so I thought that would have been a more interesting idea to pursue. I think it would not necessarily because I did like the whole Flag Smashers thing about the, you know, trying to deal with the after effects of coming back from the blip. So I didn't hate on that at all. But I would have liked to have seen the Watchdogs appear just to have what was it? To have that aspect of that storyline that would have been interesting as well, that would have tied into all of that. So.
Yeah. I mean, in the show, it did kind of feel a little separate because Sam would kind of go back and forth between going home and going to Isaiah and then kind of having his own moment of, well, should I be Captain America? And then suddenly going international and is like, oh, well, I need to fight this group that, you know, is hurting everybody. I feel like in terms of the Watchdogs, it would be interesting to see them in his own film. Given we've kind of already gotten a taste of that, you know, that he was literally on TV saying like, there are some folks, like millions of people who genuinely don't want me here.
Right.
And so, you know, if that some little speech is somehow the catalyst for the next film, I would not be surprised.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if they come, I would not be opposed to it. But although I would, you know, caution kind of being sensitive with it.
Yes.
Because there have been shows and movies in the past that have tried to tackle like white supremacy in a sense, and it has just not come across the right way. And I don't mean to say like there is a right way to do it.
Right.
But it just, you don't want to kind of generalize a pretty complicated topic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think honestly, I think it would be better to do as maybe more of a series aspect instead of doing it just in a movie, because I think with a movie, you might not have enough room to mm-hmm. breathe for that kind of story. And you would want to tackle it in a better way where you'd have more room. To do it, to have the nuance necessary for it.
Yeah. Although I feel like that's kind of been the complaint of the Disney Plus shows, and that there's not enough room. So you start off slow and then kind of rush the ending. And I think that was the initial complaint with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. In that you were suddenly kind of trying to kind of deal with the fact that the Flag Smashers were out there doing their thing, and then Sam is like, maybe I'll be Captain America, and then in the last 2 seconds he decided to do so. So that kind of feels in the same vein as, you know, we might not have enough time for anything.
I can understand that. I get that. If that is most people's issue or some people's issue with it, I can understand that. It did, having rewatched it, it did kind of like fall together a little too quickly at the end. But I also, it didn't bother me that it did. It kind of felt like, okay, we maybe meandered a little too much, and now we're just trying to bring it all together. But I didn't feel like it meandered. I felt like we needed a little more time. And I feel like, honestly, we need like a second season of the show just to kind of continue on some of these storylines. Especially with the Flag Smashers, and kind of like get some kind of, now that it's been several years since the show, maybe we can have some kind of resolution and see, did any of those issues get resolved or not? Because none of that stuff has been picked up in any of the movies. Maybe it will in the new Captain America movie.
I mean, probably they can't necessarily just drop the storyline and then hope, you know, we'll know what's going on when you continue. Although right. I would not be surprised, because it probably hasn't been the first time that's happened. Right. So yeah, it, I don't know. Even rewatching it the second time, it was, it in a sense felt like homework, because my initial impression of the show was like, okay, great, we're on Earth. But on a second rewatch, I was very much, I think the first time I paid more attention to Sam and Bucky, and I think the second time I paid more attention to Carly and John to kind of understand how they actually develop as villains and characters.
Right.
Because it's, I think, I don't think it's just Marvel, and that like a lot of media has tried to kind of humanize their villains, and that way you can understand why exactly they're doing what they do. So we don't just call them villains. And so that was the fun part, I guess, in the second rewatch, and that, oh, wait, I understand you, but I also would not go about doing things the way you do.
Yeah. I think that's what's in, I do appreciate that aspect of it. I it's interesting to go back and rewatch. I think Marvel does a good job at humanizing their antagonists. You know, cause I don't think they're always villains. I do like when they do that, but I also like when we get the crazy people who are just like out and out villains, and their reasons don't matter. Like Thanos, Kang, the High Evolutionary, those kind of villains who are just evil to be evil. I like that a lot as well. But I do like when we have these more complex villains, like you said, like Carly, John Walker, who's not really a villain. He's just, you know, he's just another antagonist for the thing. And that's why, you know, I like saying antagonist more than villain with some of these people. Cause it's like, Killmonger. Killmonger's more of an antagonist. He's kind of a villain, but he's edging a little too closer to the villain side of things. But he and I think that's where Carly becomes a villain. You know, you understand her reasons for doing what she's doing to a certain degree, but she does take it too far. And once she starts killing people, then that becomes an issue where you're just like, look, I agreed with your issues, but now you've gone too far, and now you've taken it to a place that it didn't need to go. And I think that's kind of, but they still were, and that's what made it interesting and fun, because of the nuance of it all, is that even though Sam didn't agree with the way she was doing stuff, he still wanted to bring her in and still understood her issues and wanted to bring her in safely and not have it get to where it got. So.
Yeah. And I think phase four does do a good chance of actually, you know, humanizing its antagonists.
Yeah.
In that prior phases, we would get, I don't know, villains that just walked around and just did things because they could. And I don't know how, actually, no, not doing things just because they could. I know it's a running joke that half of the villains are because Stark somehow created them.
Yeah.
And now that Stark isn't around, what are we going to do? And I really appreciated that scene where Sam sits with Carly, and that, you know, you actually get a chance to have them both. Usually when you get scenes like that where the main characters can talk to each other and try to level with each other, it seems like the antagonist doesn't make sense. They just want to do bad because they can. And it really does feel like a tipping point for Carly, because she can't decide if she wants to trust Sam or not. And of course, John has to go ahead and ruin it all. But he doesn't. I mean, John doesn't know that he's, you know, kind of ruining a good thing.
Right.
So I have no idea where I'm going with that. So sorry about that.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, you know, it's giving the chance to humanize these characters, given a chance to broaden these, you know, antagonists out rather than having them be necessarily one-offs. I think that what the MCU is doing was trying to make things, I think this is why people complain so much about Phase 4, is that the MCU, it got complicated. Mm-hmm. They made the villains sympathetic and they made the heroes less sympathetic. You know, we have Wanda who becomes this major villain and people really did not like how she turned. And, you know, and I'll get into that in my episode on Multiverse of Madness, but you know, how she turns from this grieving person into this out and out villain. And I think that's what makes this phase fascinating, is that you've got the heroes who are more complicated and more gray area. And you've got the villains who are sympathetic. And I think that's what kind of confused people, was that it wasn't black and white anymore. You could understand both sides and agree or not agree. And, you know, what does that say about you as a person if you actually agree with the villain? And I think that's kind of what tripped some people up. I could be wrong, but I feel like that's part of it. In addition to, like, they've come out and said afterward, is that Phase 4 was about grief. Everybody is grieving somebody in these movies. You know, in this movie, they're grieving the loss of Steve. Where do Sam and Bucky go after their friend who kind of helped define who they became? You know, and that's what ends up happening, is that, you know, when Sam gives up the shield, it really bothers Bucky, and Bucky doesn't know who he is as a person after that point. And he says that to Sam, is like, it made me question everything. And I love that. I love the complexity of all. It's not just, you know, Bucky who is fighting this programming, trying to, you know, again, it's not black and white. Everything about it becomes gray, and it makes the story so much more interesting in that way.
Yeah. And I mean, I partially agree in that, like, people don't appreciate the complexity of it. I think people tended to view Marvel as just popcorn.
Yes.
And to really just avoid their own issues. And then the fact that all of this is coming off the heels of a pandemic, where we spent a lot of time just grieving, you know, not only just people, but time, opportunities. It was a time where the world stood still. And now suddenly our media is reflecting it right back at us, because the Marvel world is also a place where time stood still. There were 5 years where folks, like, lost half of their world. So it's not fun when your media kind of reflects reality. I think that's part of the reason why I ended up down an anime rabbit hole when all that stuff was going down, because it's like, none of this is real.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to kind of see Sam and Bucky view themselves through the lens of Steve, and then eventually kind of shed that as the show goes on. And I think folks really ended up finding a big soft spot for Bucky then, because, you know, we could really see him for his own person and not just as this guy who's really struggling with his past as the Winter Soldier. Like, we were really, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like this is really the first moment where we actually get to sit down with Bucky and see how he thinks and feels, because before then he was just some guy with a metal arm and a gun and it's like, okay, now go. We don't want him to be a toy soldier. Yeah. He is a person as well. So, yeah.
No, I agree with you. And I think you're right on the money there about COVID happening right around everything. Phase 4 happened during and in the wake of COVID. And because of that, I think that's why people struggle with it. I think you're right on the money with that, is that while everybody in the MCU is dealing with the after effects of this massive worldwide or universe wide, genocide basically, and still dealing with all that. And then everybody comes back. And then how do you deal with the after effects of that? We as people were dealing with the pandemic and all the complications with that, and how the world kind of went nuts in terms of not just how we dealt with it, but also how we dealt with each other and the fractures in our society as well. And to see that weirdly reflected back in our media, I think that is a large part of why people find this phase to be so hard and so down that it's almost like people don't want to deal with it in the media as well. And like you said, because like you yourself, you went on an anime kick that, we were searching out things that were more that were different, that were outside of what it was. And I think that while the MCU takes more of a metaphorical view on things, that they were dealing with it all too, because Falcon and Winter Soldier definitely had to deal with the after effects of filming. They got their filming shut down. Mm-hmm. They were in the middle of filming when the pandemic hit. So they had to shut down their filming and wait until things had passed enough that they could put in the safety precautions in place to continue filming. And I think that's interesting. That's an interesting way to look at that, in reflection, in kind of a skewed reflection of our own world, that may be why people struggled so much in connecting with Phase 4 itself, especially. And again, I do think that there's a large part of it. We came off of Endgame and we came off this high of Endgame, and people struggled with just kind of going back to smaller stories.
And building grand back finale up. Yeah. And then we just kind of took a break from it. And I feel like if you don't set a good intro to any phase or any story you're going to take in, it's going to fall apart. And I think that's kind of what happened with Phase 4. I mean, you're probably going to get into any bit of Phase 4 you're going to touch on in this podcast, but eventually the stories kind of stray away from this complication of, well, what's the world going to do now? And then it just kind of doesn't address it as much. And I think that might feel a little jarring. So it's like, maybe you should have started with the stories that had nothing to do with it and then dove into it. I don't know. Just my opinion. I don't work for Marvel. So
I think that I will say that as much as I personally, I'm fine with the way they did Phase 4, and I enjoy most aspects of what, like, and most shows and movies that came out during this time, that I feel like that, yeah, like you said, it's very uneven in how they handle it. They start off in the beginning directly addressing everything, and then as they go on, they kind of go, okay, well, we're going to change things and start moving things over to more of the multiversal shenanigans. And I think that was kind of in response to a lot of stuff too, is that I think they kind of wanted to take some time. They wanted to take some reflection and sit there and go, what are the after effects of this, and how does the world move on from it? And they kind of, rather than maybe sitting with it a little bit longer, they kind of jumped ahead because people were complaining, and they were just like, okay, well, let's kind of move forward, and we'll jump into the new thing, and we'll get past it. And hopefully from this point on, they'll get a little more cohesion. But I still don't feel like it was nearly as bad as everybody else was saying.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I'm only saying that now, having seen some of the other Phase Four things. I'm not here to crap on Secret Invasion, but
No. I think Secret Invasion, I think everybody generally agrees that Secret Invasion was a stumble for them. I think that it's and you know, here's the thing. The MCU is not immune to stumbles. There's definitely movies, especially early on, that didn't quite gel. You look back and they hadn't quite found their voice yet. And I think that's the problem right now is that Phase Four, there were some stumbles. There were some things where they were trying some new things to do. They were definitely pushing the Disney Plus stuff pretty heavily. They wanted people to embrace that. So they were throwing whatever they could in there. But even with Secret Invasion not being the best that it could have been, that they still it was still a bold move. And I'll give it to them for that. You know, and I think that overall it's more that Phase Four did more good than bad, in my
Yeah.
opinion.
Would you say that Phase Four is the MCU's quarter life crisis? I only say that because I essentially grew up with the MCU. Like I was going to the theaters like when Iron Man came out. And it almost feels like, I mean, this and like Doctor Who I grew up with, and it feels like a lot of the shows are also going through the same like, who am I crisis?
I think with anything that runs so long, that you do have to, you are going to have that. You look at any franchise that's gone on for a long time, you do have those eras where things don't quite come together. You look at something like James Bond, which has been going on for a long time as well. You know, the where did that stumble? Well, that stumbled during the Timothy Dalton movies, and they didn't quite have a clear voice then. And I think that's, you know, I wouldn't even say Phase Four is a stumble, more of a they tried to do something and it didn't quite work for everybody. I would argue still, as much as it didn't work for everybody, the movies all still did very well, even during the pandemic. So it's amazing to see that despite it all, they sure they didn't do in-game numbers, but nothing could do in-game numbers. There's
Right.
yeah, I don't even think something like Secret Wars is going to end up being able to do in-game numbers. It's just not going to be possible. That in-game was built off of, you know, 12 years of storylines that all coalesced. It was amazing that they managed to do that in the way that they did. And I just don't think anything's going to happen quite the same as it did. And to expect it to do that is, I don't think, is a good thing. I think that you everybody has to manage their expectations on what the MCU is going to be going forward. I think it's going to be smaller in a lot of ways. Even when it goes big, it's not going to be as big as Endgame.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to have to be, especially after we just touched on the multiverse. I feel like if we continue expanding from there, it's just going to get more complicated. And I don't want to say this, but like more people may drop off. And I'm also conscious of the quote unquote Marvel fatigue. I wonder if Phase Four was trying to kind of continue on that excitement of Endgame and continue on that path that now people are like super exhausted because you made me go to Disney Plus like 10 different times. But I wonder if Phase Five will revive that in some sense. And I know we've only just started it, you know, inching into it. But quite frankly, like Echo just came out and I completely forgot, you know. So I'm wondering when that will pick back up. When will people start to love Marvel again? And if not, like, when will this all end?
I think that's kind of it's weird. I think that, you know, for somebody like me who has been a fan of the comic books since he was a kid, and getting to see these storylines that I've been reading or aspects of storylines that I've been reading since I was a kid coming together in live action finally, and in a cool way, not some cheesy, goofy, dumb way, but because we could have had really dumb, cheesy comic book movies, but we didn't. The MCU's made things so good, and I love being able to see this stuff. Like, you know, you mentioned She-Hulk, and I'm definitely going to be doing an episode on that. But She-Hulk picks up on new ideas that were in comic books that, again, I read as a kid, you know, and so it's interesting to have these storylines come alive finally. And for me, you know, I didn't care that all these MCU shows were on Disney Plus and that there were so many of them. I wanted more. I still want more, but they're not going to do that. They're taking a step back. The head of Disney now, Bob Iger, has said that they're going to do less shows, which, you know, for most people was like, okay, yes, I don't have to watch as much. But I've argued, and I will argue again on this show, you don't have to watch everything. Watch what you want to watch. Enjoy what you enjoy. And if you want to watch it all, yes, definitely watch it all. You get a much broader, more filled in view of the MCU as a whole. But if you don't watch certain things, you're not really going to be missing out. If you watch Multiverse of Madness and you didn't watch WandaVision, they tell you enough in WandaVision or in Multiverse of Madness to get you into the story. Would it give you more depth and understanding of where Wanda's at? Yes. But you don't necessarily have to watch that to understand Multiverse of Madness. And I'll continue to argue that as much as I can. And it's the same with the Marvels. I think, you know, watching the Marvels recently, if you hadn't watched WandaVision or Ms. Marvel, you would get a broader understanding, yes, of where these other two characters came from, but it wasn't necessary because they told you just enough to get you into the show or into the movie. And I think that pulling back like they're doing is a two-edged sword, is a double-edged sword, that you're going to lose some of these smaller stories because now they're not going to, maybe they're not going to give us these extra stories of these characters like Echo. I enjoyed Echo as much as, you know, we've already moved past it. Part of that is because they dumped every single episode on one day rather than doing what they have been doing and spreading it out week after week, where we had more time, where we would have more time to talk about it and interact with it. And this, there'd be more of this, like I said, talk about it. And by doing what they did, by dumping it all at once, is that's why we've all kind of forgotten it already. We talked about it for like a good week and then it's gone. And that's kind of what happens with Netflix shows. Nobody talks about Netflix shows much past their release date because they dump everything and it gets a week or two of big hype and then it vanishes. And that's the same with anything like that. But when you do it, when you spread out a show on Disney Plus or anywhere else, you get longer time to talk about it. You know, and it's the same thing with the What If season two. You didn't hear anybody talking about What If season two because they dumped it all within what, 9 days during Christmas.
Yeah.
And nobody's cared to talk about that as much. And there's some interesting ideas going on in that and in that as well. So I feel like moving forward, they're running, I think, for the people who have quote unquote Marvel fatigue. I think those people are going to be happier because they won't have as much that they feel like they have to go see or have to watch. But for those who are like me, who just gobble everything up, it'll be slightly disappointing that I won't be getting as much, as many stories to enjoy because of that. And that's fine, you know, but we used to have it where it was only, there were no TV shows and it was just one movie a year. And then they expanded that to three movies a year. And you know, multiple TV shows. So
yeah, it was just too much at us at once.
No, and I will agree. It is hard to keep up. I definitely, when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came out, I was watching that pretty hardcore in the beginning, but about midway through, I kind of fell off. Now, partially that was because the Inhuman storyline, and I did not care for Inhumans. So I was just kind of like, okay, this is really boring. Stop trying to make the Inhumans the mutants, okay? Stop it. That's a whole other story. But yeah, but Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think it's good to go back and rewatch this and just see how strong it actually really was. Despite any criticisms I might have with some aspects of the storyline, I think overall it's a very strong story, and we get a lot of interesting things to talk about in this. I mean, we haven't even talked about a lot of the stuff that Sam's going through, and then Isaiah Bradley's storyline, which brings up the complicated history of not only in the comic books, the complicated history of the super soldier serum and all the variants and things that have happened after Steve became Captain America, but also the history of our own like reality, the history of America, and how we've treated Black people by experimenting on them and everything. It's fascinating to get this kind of storyline in the MCU and have it reflected back at us.
Yeah, and I think that's also why the government grounded stories have always killed me, because it always felt like it kind of jumped on that, I guess, super patriotism that I can't stand.
Yeah.
And for once, it takes Captain America and, you know, kind of waters it down to say, hey, it's not all good. And here's what we should actually uncover. That's not just, oh, we've got Hydra infiltrating. We don't know that. It's we are our own fault. And, you know, and while this may just be an isolated incident here in America, in the fictional America that's in Marvel, it is true around the world. And I guess that's kind of where the Flag Smashers come in, and it's like, hey, this is a bigger issue as well.
Yeah.
I did appreciate at the end, though, that Isaiah gets his own statue, that, you know, we need this acknowledgement after a long time. And, you know, sometimes it's not just enough to say sorry. It's more to say, hey, let me educate you more on what's going on. And I think that's another thing this comes off the heels of, like, that summer where Black Lives Matter and we had all these protests. Mm-hmm. Like, this is on the heels of that as well. So this show also kind of had to do the same sense of, you know, we'll become knowledgeable, teach yourself on what's going on, and don't just give your own thought to it. Take a second and listen to someone else's story. So it was nice to see Isaiah brought in and be that person who was like, this is someone else's story, so we can form how Sam functions in the future. And now that I say that, and you say that you're disappointed that you're getting less Marvel, I'm thinking I may do a third rewatch when Captain America 4 comes out, because I'm very excited now.
Yeah. No, I think that's what is really cool about this is I do know that Isaiah Bradley is supposed to be in the new movie. So I think there's going to be some continuation of that storyline, which will be fascinating. But I think that it's holding up this mirror to our reality and showing us this stuff and making us confront this reality was good. And I think that's kind of the problem that some people have in this country is there is a contingent of people who want to ignore our harsh realities of this country. And that they feel like if they ignore it, it means that it didn't happen, or that they can brush it aside. And not focus on it. And that's what they don't understand, is that we can still love the country while moving forward in it. And this is what kind of where Sam's at with it. By the end of this is that, you know, just because you're confronting the past and reckoning with it doesn't mean that you can't move forward in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, it's there's so much in this show that I think people really need to go back and look at and just absorb, because it just, it's such a reflection, you know. And that's what I like about it too, is it's not fantastical. And like you said, you know, having to deal with this government. And I argue that while the Captain America movies may seem like they're rah-rah America, they're kind of not. Mm-hmm. They kind of take this tone of that's kind of where Captain America comes from it himself too, is that while he fights for America, he doesn't fight for the government and never has. You see, even in First Avenger, where he bucks authority, you know, he's like, I'm going to do. And it was something I don't think I noticed it the first time, but Isaiah literally does the same thing Steve does. He goes against orders and goes in behind enemy lines to go save his fellow soldiers and gets punished for it. Whereas Steve became a hero.
Mm-hmm.
To everybody. And because Isaiah was black, he was punished for it. And it's a fascinating duality to the storyline to see that they were very much the same in terms of their heroism and their attitudes and everything. But one, because he's white, blonde, and blue-eyed, he gets to become the hero. And because the other is black, he becomes, you know, not necessarily a villain, but, you know, he gets punished for it. And mm-hmm. it's just fascinating to see, to have that kind of story. And it's great to have Isaiah get his statue and his recognition, at the end. And I love that, aspect of it, because it's something that needs to be, we need to tell these stories. We need to know of our dark history, because it doesn't mean that we ourselves are bad now. It means that we can look back and understand that we did bad things and we can do better in the future. And that's what we should be doing. And we should be embracing that. So, yeah. Go ahead.
It's really interesting that we're actually recording this during Black History Month.
Unintentional.
Unintentionally, but it is kind of fitting in the fact that a lot of Black stories that are told may kind of be like Isaiah and Steve, and that, you know, there may be a mirror mm-hmm. in which someone who was white did the exact same thing, but someone who was Black got the like a completely different outcome. And in the fact that we don't quite learn history, not just of Black people, but of maybe BIPOC folks or anyone mm-hmm. who's considered a minority, we don't think about it until it's retrospect. And we don't observe it until much later, until we have a different perspective. And your first thought is, well, I wouldn't have done that. And it's like, of course you wouldn't have done that. You're seeing it after the fact.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is kind of nice to see our media show us something that could happen in real time. I mean, not like we're going to have a Captain America tomorrow, but if there is someone out there who wants to do good and, you know, I don't know how to phrase this, but kind of, you know, wants to take their own heroism in a way and help others, there is some form of inspiration out there, even if it's fictional.
Yes.
We don't have some kind of like afterthought of, well, this happened years ago. It's like, no, this could happen now. And I think it's really nice to have Marvel kind of play that role in history now.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and I think that you know, having Sam become Captain America is a bold move. They did it in the comic books. And when it happened in the comic books, it got a lot of flack. Mm-hmm. And then it got reflected in the comic books themselves as well. Part of the storyline was how much negative attention it got that he became Captain America. And, you know, obviously because of the racist contingent out there. And it's going to be interesting to see that it's probably going to happen again when this movie comes out. Yeah. That you're going to have people who are just like, oh, well, that's not Captain America, you know, And it's just, it's ridiculous. I think that, you know, it's like Sam says at the end of the show, is that it's their country too. You know, they, Black people have fought and bled for this country and have gotten no recognition for it. And in many ways have gotten punished for it. And that's ridiculous. We need to be raising everybody up in this world, and in this country specifically. And until we do, we are a joke. I'm sorry. We just are.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, and if you don't agree with me, you know, that's fine. You're wrong. It's just, until we raise everybody up, it's not worth it. So, and I think that that's what this show shows very well, is that you can be proud and you can be fighting for this country just as much as anybody else. And we should accept that. And just, I, you know, coming from my, you know, lily white, you know, perspective, you know, I try to, and that's why I personally want to have other voices on my show, you know, is because I can sit here and talk this all day long, but I don't have that perspective. That other people from minorities or women or queer people have, they have other perspectives I'm just never going to have. And that's why I try to highlight other voices other than my own as well. So,
and just say again, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It has been interesting because I am white passing. So I have experienced instances where some folks would treat me in different ways. It's hard to explain that, but in some sense, they'll say things that they really shouldn't be saying in front of me.
Right.
And I've kind of had to sit there and be like, well, actually you should speak a different way. And I shouldn't have to be the person to tell you that. So it is a little interesting that we're having this conversation and neither one of us are Black.
Yeah.
So I don't want to speak for someone else, but I do really enjoy the fact that, you know, Marvel is taking the step to diversify the content, and bring other voices into the fold. And even if you don't like a Black Captain America, screw you, because I do.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm on board with you.
Yeah. No, I think Sam is a great choice. In the comic books, he's been Captain America. He was Captain America for a while, then went back to being Falcon, and then has since become Captain America again in conjunction with Steve. In the comic books, they are both Captain America now. And so I love that so much, because you have Steve, who gets to be this sentinel of liberty, this man who is our paragon of white savior. But you also have Sam, who's out there fighting his fight and being this example for Black people, and to fight for Black people, and not just Black people, but minorities of all sorts, and the oppressed. And as much as I say that, Steve does the same thing. Steve is always about everybody. Steve is not out there fighting just for the white man and just for his, and never for the government. He is always out there fighting for the American dream for everybody. And I think that's, you know, an important thing to understand, is that, you know, you see it in the movies, but also I just want people to understand that in the comic books, it's even more so, that Steve does not discriminate and is not this person, and anybody, any, you know, person who's racist or anything else like that, that tries to co-opt Captain America as their hero and stuff like that, is doing it massively incorrectly. And you should be, you know, laughed at, because you just do not understand who Captain America is at all. So,
right. Like, do you understand what you're looking at, what you're reading, what you're watching? Are you absorbing that? And it is interesting to kind of go back to our antagonists in that, you know, they do think they're right in a sense for one group in particular, or one sort of facet of their personality. Like John is very much raised by the military and the government. And so he even says, like, I've done everything you told me to do, and I continue to do so, even if it may be in a skewed way. And Carly is also representing like one particular group. And if you don't understand that we need to do right for everyone, then you are at fault.
Right.
So it, you know, that's why we need to continue watching these shows and actually absorb them. And anyone who has actually forgotten Falcon and the Winter Soldier in their watch, please go back and go see it.
Absolutely.
Just being on this show alone has given me an appreciation for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So thank you again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And like, we haven't really talked about Carly and the Flag Smashers too much. But I do feel like, you know, because the problem is that as much as we get some in depth with them, it's still kind of surface level with them. They're overall ideals are good. They want no borders. They want everybody to like their slogan is one world, one people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a great sentiment to have and something to work towards. You can't force everybody to do it all at once. It's just not possible. And I think that's where they go about doing it wrong, is you can't force everybody to just like set down all their divisions. You know, we are inherently a divided people. We create these lines for all these different various reasons, both good and bad. But, you know, I think ultimately when it comes down to it, that their overall ideal is something to strive for, that we all should be one world and one people. We all should be able to put aside our differences and celebrate the commonalities between each other, and work towards that kind of world that we can all be together as one. You know, and I think that's, for me, that's what I want to work towards, without, you know, blowing people up. So
I mean, yeah, that would be the best way to go about it. Ideally, I think a lot of conflict is definitely around, you know, we all may have the same ideals, but you're going about it a different way than I am.
Right.
And if that hurts people, that's definitely the wrong way. But it is nice to see that, you know, even in that scene with Sam and Carly, they have the same ideas. They want everyone to be at peace. They want everyone to have a place to live and exist and, you know, enjoy each other. But of course it's the physical, literal way of you're doing this wrong. That's not how we should be striving for one world, one people.
Right. And I think that there's an underlying aspect of this, because they were doing what they were doing how they could, but it's once they got the power of the super soldier serum that it becomes the power corrupts issue. Mm-hmm. Is that once they were strong enough to do something, that's when it pushed them to doing the wrong things, because then they're like, well, we finally have the power to do something. And it's very much, and you see it with John. Once he gets the super soldier serum, he takes things to a degree that it didn't need to go. And that's, you know, that's why, like they said, Sam doesn't do that. Sam isn't interested in that because he doesn't need the power to be who he is. And he accepts his limitations. And I think that's an interesting aspect of this show that really doesn't get talked about, is just that the way that the power corrupts, and not in the serum affected them in a way that, you know, made them not who they were, because essentially to their core, they were still the same people. John is still who he is. Carly was still who she was underneath it all. But the power corrupted them, not in their ideals, but in the way they went about them. And I think that's ultimately, you know, how that, you know, it's an interesting kind of subtext to everything that doesn't really get mentioned very much. But again, I think that's because a lot of people don't talk about the Falcon and Winter Soldier as a whole. People just kind of gloss over it.
Yeah, I feel like we've got like two different conversations kind of going on simultaneously in that, like, Falcon and the Winter Soldier is touching on really big things going on in the world. And then also nobody's paying attention to the problems that are going on, like, with Marvel, period. Or yeah, like how their views of it are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's complicated for sure. Mm-hmm. It, you know, Marvel's at a crossroads right now. And what are they going to do? And, you know, how are they going to move forward? I know previous to your rewatch, you weren't super into, you know, the more reality based, you know, stories of the MCU and everything. But I think we need those still. Mm-hmm. I think that we need some stories that keep us grounded to a degree and give us a little touch of fantastical in all of this.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of go against that because, like, I love Spider-Man. I, like, am absolutely obsessed with Spider-Man. And that is very much, like, a grounded thing. Like, he's just your neighborhood kid. And I think it's more that, like, any governmental thing that or military thing that kind of touches on that sense of, like, patriotism that I'm uncomfortable with is something that I shy away from. But if we had grounded stories like Spider-Man, like Ms. Marvel, I'm here for it.
True.
So maybe we could bring it back to, you know, your normal everyday person, you know, dealing with these big things, I guess.
True. I think that I think you're going to be slightly disappointed with Captain America 4 then, because I think we're going to still be dealing with a lot of that, you know, governmental stuff, because, you know, one of the, you know, because we're still getting, I think it's going to be continuation on stuff that's happening in here. We've got Thunderbolt Ross, who's going to be in the movie now, played by Harrison Ford, which will be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One aspect that I did want to talk about this was the character of Sharon Carter in this. We haven't touched on her at all, and I think this is one of the more complex aspects that I know a lot of people were not happy about her characterization in this, that she turns from essentially this character who was on the side of Steve and Bucky and Sam, and then ends up becoming the power broker, this person who is essentially kind of almost the main villain in all of this, who's kind of pulling all the strings behind everything, mm-hmm. in a way. Even at the end, you know, she gets her pardon and is back in the United States and is going to have access to all the government stuff again. And now she's whoever she's talking to on the phone at the end. She's now essentially, you know, a one woman Hydra. So, it's an interesting aspect of the character to take, especially given in the comic books, Sharon Carter is actually the partner of Steve, and has been for a long time, the romantic and, you know, not sidekick, but, you know, mission partner or whatever.
Like partner in crime, essentially.
Partner in crime, yeah. Partner in not crime. but yeah, it's interesting to see this character because she didn't get, because of the way the MCU worked it out, is that because Peggy was his long lost love, he never got that full storyline of how they did it with Sharon in the comic books, because Sharon fulfills that role in the comic books for him. And so it's interesting to see this alternate reality version of her and seeing her become this villain in a way. So what did you think?
So what you're saying is the multiverse had started then. Because I remember at the end of Endgame, like people were absolutely pissed that Steve went back for Peggy because you rewrite Agent Carter completely. And that bothered me too because I loved Agent Carter. But Sharon has never always been my favorite character. So to see her take this turn doesn't matter much to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by it, honestly. As much as I like that who she is in the comic books, it didn't bother me that they did this with her character because of the way they handled the whole Peggy and Steve thing. And I'll agree, there are aspects I didn't mind too much that he ends up with Peggy. I do mind the way they went about it. And like you said, it kind of rewrites Agent Carter and kind of just messes with a lot of stuff that it leaves more questions than answers, in my opinion. But leaving Sharon out in the cold like that and not having that storyline picked up, you had to have something with Sharon if you were going to ever use her. You could have just left her alone and just been like, yeah, we're not going to bother with even dealing with that character anymore. But then giving her this new aspect of being the power broker and being this person, it made the character a lot more interesting, and a lot more fun, and gave Emily Van Camp something to do, now that she's not tied to Steve anymore. So, but it, so for me, it didn't bother me. I was like, okay, this is interesting, fun. Let's see where they go with it. And so I'm hoping that we'll get to see more of her and see what she's been doing since this show.
Yeah, I really, it is kind of interesting. She sort of girl bossed her way into becoming her own empire. It almost feels like it gives that message of like, you don't need a man to lead you. You can do it yourself.
Yeah,
And I
absolutely.
don't know how comfortable I feel with that either. But it is interesting to see her take on her own kind of, I hate to use this word right now, power. But I am excited to see how she expands. I mean, I wonder, is she, do we know if she's going to be in Captain America 4 for sure? Or is she just kind of showing up
I didn't
to
see her
maybe?
name on the list, but that doesn't mean she won't be in it, because you never know if they're going to pull somebody in or not. I didn't remember seeing her on the list at all. So I guess we'll see. But obviously, Bucky's not in the movie as well, because he's got his own movie, the Thunderbolts, coming eventually as well. So, and I think
And that's
that's
my
what's
heart breaks now.
interesting. Yeah, and that's what's interesting to me too, is that we're not getting Bucky at all in Captain America 4. And I get that the reason why is because they really want to focus on Sam being Captain America, and let Bucky have his own sort of own movie with the Thunderbolts. Although, having Yelena and that's going to kind of mess things up, because I'm sorry, but I'm a big Yelena fan. So, I think she's going to steal the show on that one.
Yeah, I feel like they would like be besties in some sense. They kind of got the same attitude on certain things. Maybe Bucky will be in the after credits and then somehow we'll be like, okay, now Thunderbolts in that
And
transition. I don't
that would be a cool way to do it.
know.
Make a little transition between the two movies, because I think they will kind of work in tandem a little bit. There's been some casting issues going on with Thunderbolts, so we'll see what happens in the long run. I saw an article that was saying that they should just cancel Thunderbolts outright, and I was like, no, please don't do that. I'm excited for this movie. The character of Ghost, I guess, has been written out of it, because of, and then Steven Yeun was supposed to be in the movie, Ayo Edebiri was supposed to be in the movie, but both of their characters have been recast now, because in the aftermath of the strikes, people's availabilities changed, and so those two actors weren't available anymore. So it'll be interesting to see what they go with. I know somebody was complaining because Ghost was now out of it. That made all the characters very much the same, because we've got Yelena, Bucky, Red Guardian, and Taskmaster. Mm-hmm. And they're all kind of just very physical, you know, non-powered people. And so they're all kind of samey. And I was like, yeah, but that's not a bad thing. You know, more human stuff can be fun with that. So
it's not the first time we're getting that. We're literally talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Exactly.
Like, it's the same
exactly.
thing. It's okay.
But yeah, so it'll be interesting. I'm excited to see where both of these movies go with these characters, and to see their ever evolving status, because it seems like both Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan seem to be on board for continuing on with the MCU as long as possible.
Well, I hope so. I'm not so excited for Sebastian Stan playing Donald Trump. So let's get him back to playing Bucky, please.
I had not heard that. Oh, no.
You didn't know about that.
No.
Oh, man. The pictures are absolutely insane. If you go look it up.
I will have to look it up now. Oh, man. All right. But I think that's all I have to say about this. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to mention?
I don't believe so, but now I have a newfound appreciation for the show. So that's all it is.
All right. Well, that's always good. All right. Well, why don't you let people know where they can find you online?
Yeah. So I am the co-host of the Remote Watch podcast. Our episodes are wherever you can find podcasts. We will have a Doctor Who episode coming out soon, so stay tuned for that. You can find me on Twitter, I'm going to call it, at yep. The Market Tweets. And all of my, you can hear my voice on every Remote Watch platform, on Twitter at Remote Watch, on Instagram at Remote_Watch, and at RemoteWatchPod.com.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. I very much appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll definitely have to get you on for a future episode as well.
Yeah, I'm totally down for that.
All right. Thanks again to Julia for joining me. On Monday, Preston Fossil makes a long-awaited return to the show to talk about The Psychopath and Angel, Angel, Down We Go. And on Friday, Ashley Wahanko joins me to talk about Season 1 of Loki. Thanks for listening. Creepy and Geeky is a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Please check out morbidlybeautiful.com/podcasts for more great shows. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast is Gratitude, composed by Jerry Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Blue Sky, and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by ordering teas and more on TeePublic or by donating to the coffee page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.